Today, today is the fifth day.
March, isn't it?
Fifth day of March.
It's a Wednesday. What is your full name?
Donald Carl Goss.
And you were, you told me you were born.
Well, I was born in a log camp in Painter Run. My father and grandfather were in the logging business. And the old, the railroad, logging railroad came up to the Limestone Mountain area, Tucker County. And they had the log flats, and they'd bring the, they would put the camp, the log camp, on the flats and move it on up where they're cutting timber, and then set it off. And that's where I was born. And in the camp there. The old site's still there. I was there several years ago, some where the old blacksmith shop and stuff sit, where the old pieces of iron and stuff are still there several years ago. That's, I was born there in 1922. Stuff's rusting up pretty well by now.
So your mother was traveling with her?
Yes, my father and my grandfather owned a logging, and then then my father was killed on 219 here before the road was paved. He had an automobile accident, and that was 1924. I was just 2 years old when they had moved up here, and he got killed. Mother had six of us, and of course back in those days, she'd, with no Social Security or no income at all, well, she raised six of us and through a lot of hard times, through the Depression. And she just went to work. She was never married again. She just went to work scrubbing houses and hanging wallpaper. I guess that's where we get to hang wallpaper. She used to help her. And, we lived up here, and we've lived here ever since then. She's lived down the street, and we've lived right around her. My oldest brother, John, went into the Navy a week after I did in 1942, and he stayed in the Navy, and he was going to retire 20-some years later, and he had a heart attack and died on the ship up in Providence, Rhode Island. My oldest sister died in 1936, and then another... My another sister died, so at least three of the children.
What kind of schooling would you have gotten growing up in a mountain camp?
Well, see, they'd moved to town here. I just was born in a lumber camp, and then my father got killed shortly after, and so they moved into town here. They had moved into town before. They were moving to camp, see. They went down to Spring Creek next to Lewisburg, and they were cutting timber there. And they cut when they would cut an area out, then they would move. And they moved back here to Tucker County, and he got killed. And they, and their little organization had split up. My grandfather went and left, and so my mother and us six kids were staying here. Well, we were staying. My grandfather, a Civil War veteran, lived down the street, so my mother moved in with him, and we stayed there.
So, who was your mother?
Merle Hebb. Her maiden name was Hebb. She was one of my grandfather and grandmother had I think it was 12 children, and she was the youngest of them. My grandfather was 52 years old when she was born.
He was
Civil War veteran. John C. Hebb was his name.
Do you remember him very well?
Oh yeah, yes. He died. He was 96 years old. Died in 1940. I was just finishing high school when he died.
Did he tell any tales about the war?
Oh yeah. Oh, I remember. There, They were to guard the B&O Railroad. They were in the Union Army, and they were guard the B&O Railroad, the Southern troops who came over to Beverly and through that area were going to try to take the supply line, which was the B&O Railroad. It went to down at Rollsburg. And so it was their job to guard the B&O Railroad through that area. Preston County on up to Wheeling, and they were stationed along there. My grandfather, he enlisted in the Union Army, was only 16 years old, and of course my grandfather was a lieutenant in the same company of 6th West Virginia Infantry, and they served together in the same to completion of the war.
And that was your father's father?
My mother's father.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. I would say that she is the last surviving child of a Civil War veteran. By her age, the time she was born, my age of my grandfather when she was born, and the age that she is now, 90 years old, she would be, if not the last, among the last of the actual children of the veterans.
In this county or in this state? Or?
I'd say it would cover a large area because that age, and you know, for her to be born that late in his life, well, it'd be hardly a survivor now would have to be pretty old.
Unless she's the only one of the 12 children?
Oh, yeah, she's the last one. Mm-hmm. She takes care of herself most days. She fell and broke a hip a while back, and she's got a steel hip joint in. But she doesn't see too good yet, but she insists on her own independence. She don't want anybody else to keep her or anything. She wants to keep herself. She's a tough woman. She went through a lot of hardships all through the Depression and everything. If you raise 6 kids through a Depression, she's cleaned houses, hung wallpaper, and washed clothes, and done all that kind of work until she got a job at the wool mill back in the 30s. She got a job there. It's enough to keep us in food. Moose Lodge wanted to take us children to, when my father got killed, wanted to take us to Moose Heart and keep us, but she wouldn't allow that. She said her children, she would keep them, so she stuck with us.
Who was your dad's people, your grandfather?
My grandfather, it was Goss. His name was my grandfather on my father's side was Francis Friel Goss Jr., and they called him Frank. My grandfather was named Francis Friel Goss, and he called him Frank. Now my father's name was Francis Friel Goss Jr., and they called him Dan. He didn't go by the same name.
He got into the timber business probably right after shortly after the Civil War.
Well, I don't know what year it was. They were young. See, he got killed. My father got killed in 1922, and well, yeah, my mother and dad were married. I don't know. They must have been married around 12 or somewhere along here. So it was a good ways after the Civil War. Mother born in 96, later than that though they married. He was killed, he was pretty young.
So what did you do after school then?
Well, I went to work. I worked before I finished school. When I was real small, I sold house to house. I'd sell Mondays, I would take soap, powder, and soap, and washing washing powder stuff, and I go house door to door over, and mostly in the tannery row in that area, and I'd sell. I was in the summertime, and then I would sell canning spices and those things in the canning season. I go door to door, and then the CC cans moved in, and on payday I would take shaving creams and lotions and all that up to the CC camp and sell up there. And then I worked in a store. Lambert's had a supply store right down here across the track. And I worked there, and then when I got a driver's license in 1938, and I started driving their delivery truck. And when I was in a junior in my senior year in high school, well, I'd get off on Wednesdays off school, and I'd drive the delivery truck on Wednesday. And I drove it on Wednesday and Saturday. Then I worked on the evening, every evening in the store. And then after I finished high school, then Brennan gave me a job. I drove a beer truck for Brennan. I hauled beer from Baltimore, and then I had a some of the local routes up to Lewisburg, not Lewisburg, but up the valley above Elkins and clear around Cass, Durbin, and that area, and over Franklin. And I drove there until he died. Well, I drove there until I went into service in 1942, enlisted in the Navy, in October 42. And I went overseas real quick in the Navy. I enlisted in October on October the 7th, 1942, and then 42 days later, I'd went through boot camp and was on an ammunition ship as a gunner, and I'd went from a apprentice seaman to seaman first class in 42 days. So they was in a hurry back then to get me out. We started hauling bombs to England. From Cavens Point, New Jersey, to Avon's Mouth, England, Bristol Avon's Mouth, and we hauled all explosives. We traveled by ourselves, and that part of the war. And then we came back the first of the year and took small arms ammunition and supplies up to Africa, up to Dakar, and we was in Dakar and. Down along the coast of Africa, Takoradi, and we put off the last of our supplies on the Ascension Island between South America and Africa. They had a base where they would ferry bombers from here to South America, and then they would refuel at Ascension Island. And we put in supplies there and then come down to South America back home. And I travel, and then I get off the ship in New Orleans, and I got on another ship in Mobile, Alabama, and then we went to Puerto Rico, and from Puerto Rico, we left Puerto Rico, and a submarine got after us, and we're on this ground in Mayagüez, Puerto Rico. And when we got off there, we went to finally. After several days of getting unloading cargo, we had a cargo of sugar. I was a Navy gunner on merchant ships. So they put a gun crew on every merchant ship, and that's where I was a Navy gunner on it. And then we went from there to Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, and we got in a convoy in Guantanamo and went to New York and then on to England. I made 10 trips to England during the war, back and forth, two to South America. And
did you ever have to do any fancy shooting?
No, I didn't. Opportunity. We weren't allowed to shoot at a enemy plane unless it was a direct attack on us. We run the coast, the east coast of England, over a year before the invasion. And German spotter planes would come out and spot us. When we get on that coast, we would form we run that in convoy. We'd have sometimes as many as 18 ships, and we'd go in two columns. And the spotter planes would come out, and Spot, we'd see them, and then they would, well, we might stop the whole convoy for maybe run like into Edinburgh, Scotland, and stay in there for 3 or 4 hours, and then come out and go on down to mess up their timing. And the reason for not firing at them, if you fired on a, usually their bombers would come over at nighttime. And if you fired on them, then you just location of your convoy, and they would come down, and they destroy a lot of ships, and you couldn't do much damage to them. Then at nighttime, the German E-boats would do their attack. They would lay in wait for you at nighttime, and then they'd make a running shot at you and then go back across. And the one night we had 19 ships, we was going down the coast, and we had 21 escort vessel. And five of the German U-boat, or PT boats, whatever you call them, they came from the outside, and I was on the inside calling them. I never got to fire a shot at them, but the outside column and the escort sank 3 out of 5 of them. So. But they would run right in your convoy. We had orders to fire it on anything smaller than destroyer coming in those columns at nighttime, because the E-boats are sneaking in there, and they'd throw a torpedo and go on. So. And I was on a tanker with a load of diesel oil down when the invasion started of France. We didn't get to go over on it. They unloaded us and took us up in the Thames River and unloaded. So, but my oldest brother was on a LST. He was a first class machinist, engineman, they called him at the time. I was a gunner's mate, with the crew of gunners. So I stayed in the service till the war ended, and they sent me back home. And so, but the quickness that they took us, I went through boot camp. I went up to Great Lakes, Illinois, and I wore a pair of brown dress shoes when I went into camp there. And I was there for 30 days, and they gave me a pair of other shoes to see, before I got home on 9-day leave. So we got a half issue of clothes and what would fit us, and then when we went back off a 9-day leave, they shipped us up to New York and put us on ships, replacement crews. And there's about 400 of us went out that quick. Just with no training. We didn't even have a gun in boot camp, but they put us out and said, "You're gunners." And the biggest part of those were from around this part of the country, from West Virginia, Kentucky. I know the five boys that I went with in a replacement of an 18-man crew. We had, there were two from West Virginia, two from Virginia, and one from Kentucky out of the five I was replacing. So I came back after the war, and then I went to driving truck again. I drove truck until Mr. Brennan died, and they changed hands with the business and all. And I worked around, and I went to work in the coal mines up at Kempton. And I worked there till 1950, and they closed the mines down. And then I came back down here, and I worked for Ralph Stewart in the appliance business. And until I went to work on construction in 1952. And I worked all over the country on construction until I went to work directly out of the union hall in Clarksburg for the labor's union as a field agent. And I went to work there in 1963, I think it was, sometime around 63. And I stayed there until I retired then.
Were you an organizer?
Well, I was business manager after 10 years as field manager. Then I was the business manager, negotiate contracts, and take care of any problems we had. And I was of course, I was a trustee on all the health and welfare and pension plans. And it kept me quite busy. I had to be in Charleston a lot besides my offices in Clarksburg. And we had an apartment over Clarksburg for a while, but I still had my home here. And then when Hilda got sick, then I just gave up my apartment. I started driving back and forth Clarksburg to home till I retired. They were real nice to me. The boat that I have out here, they gave me that as a retirement gift. It was a lot better than a watch. A $6,000 boat, and then the other group gave me a chart recorder for it. They paid $400 and some for it. And so I've been treated real well. We feel very fortunate. We work for good people, and we've been treated good. So.
Where did you and Hilda meet?
We met, Hilda's home was in the Cannon Settlement. That's down the past the sand plant in Tucker County. They call it the Cannon, C-A-N-O-N. Or C-A-N-A-N, I guess. It's not A-A-N. C-A-N-A-N. Settlement. And her home was up there, and I was up in, at Silver Lake, and I met her one evening. And we've been together ever since. Since 1942. We've come up now on coming up to our 44th anniversary.
So, did you marry before you went overseas?
Yeah, we were married before I went to service. I went to service right after it. And then our son Danny, I was in 42, and our son Danny was our oldest one of our children. He was born in 1944. Of course, my other two daughters, Donna was born in 47, and Jeannie was born in 49. Now we have the children, six grandchildren, one great-grandchild.
Great-grandchild.
Yeah, Zach. Zach's our great-grandchild, grandson. We have another grandson, Michael.
Well, the boat came in pretty handy, I guess.
Yes, it did. It. Handier than I thought. I do like to fish. We do a lot of fishing, and I spend a lot of time on the water. I love the water. I'm not afraid of water. And the roughest of the ocean got during the war, and it got pretty rough. It tore up a lot of things on the ship and went through a lot of storm, but still didn't bother me any. I told Hilda, just like riding on an ammunition ship with 8,000 some ton of explosive, all explosive, by yourself in 1942, no escorts or no gear to hunt submarine like you have now. In Atlantic, it was pretty rough to go to North Atlantic. But I wasn't scared. And the reason I wasn't scared, I was too darn to be scared. I come out of the hills here, and you come out, you're never on a ship. I seen one in Baltimore one time when I went down there after a load of beer. I'd seen one at the dock. I happened to get lost going through Baltimore, and I happened to get down at the end of Light Street, and there was a ship tied up. Big old rusty-looking thing. The only time I'd ever seen one, actually, in the water. And so they took me right out of these hills and put me on the ship and told me I was a gunner on a 20-millimeter gun. I'd never even seen one of them. And sent me this. But then I like to fool. I like to fix things. And when I caught the second ship down in Mobile, Alabama, they had a 5-inch 51 gun that wouldn't work. It wouldn't train or wouldn't elevate. And here it set this setting pointing back astern, and you couldn't use it. And they had Navy Yard people in there, and they said it was an obsolete gun. It had a nameplate on it, the old number 12 gun of the old USS Maryland. And they said it was obsolete and the gears were wore out in it, and they couldn't do anything with it. And so we started out to sea. I was up on the gun, and I just started fooling around things, and I seen some parts that were the trunnion adjustments, which sits right in on your axle on your gun like a brake shoe. They're metal, and you take up the slack in the trunnion, just like a bearing. Only when you put them in, it takes up the slack. And I took them off to one side there, and I cleaned them up and greased them. I put them back in, and I ran around on the other side of the gun. I took them out of there, and I cleaned them up real good, greased them, put them back in. Turned the elevation wheel on the gun, it walked right up. Wasn't a thing wrong with it on it. There was just like brake shoes in there. But you couldn't train the gun then. It set on big bearings. A big gun, it shot you used a 52-pound shell projectile and 27-pound powder bag. It's a pretty good sized gun. It's 551. And so a buddy of mine came up. He was a seaman first class too, and he seen me working on one side, and he said he'd just help me. So we couldn't take the gun off, as heavy as it was. You couldn't do anything, but there's two plates that you could take off down on the base. So we took those off. We started pouring more and more oil in there around there. And he'd get out on the end of the barrel and shove, and I'd work the wheel. We got the thing moving, and we got it broke loose, and we kept pouring the oil and moving it around. We had the gun work slick as a new one. And we had one officer, Navy officer on the ship, the gunnery officer, and he came out of midship and he seen us working the gun, and right back he came. And he said, "What on earth did you do to the gun?" He said, that gun was broke, they couldn't repair it. I said, "We just cleaned it up." Well, he said, "Put a gunner's mate stripe on, you fixed it, it's your gun, I'll give you a crew." And he gave me a crew for it, and he gave my buddy, then he gave him a coxswain's mate rate, which was the equivalent of a sergeant. Seems both of us were equivalent of sergeant back in the Army at that time. So then I had that gun until I got on the next ship, and then I had 8 20 millimeters on it. And then most of the time then I had the 20 millimeter guns on the ships, on the four different ships I was on. But it wasn't hard to get a rate. You go from apprentice seaman to seaman first class in a few days. They give you a rate pretty quick. Of course, when the gunner officer said you sew the stripe on, he said, "When you get in, you'll get a little test, but you're a gunner mate right now." And I went in, I took a little test there that they had, and of course, it wasn't too hard to pass. But I guess the Navy Yard just won't fool with the gun. They just said it's obsolete, can't get the gears for it, and walk on. But it's a good gun. We had all the thing. We had more tools that went with that gun than they would have, because we had the full everything that came off the old USS Maryland. We had bore sight and bore sighting kit and everything for it. So we had a pretty good gun there. Good to use, anyhow.
But now, you like the water. You just naturally...
Yeah, I like the water. I like the water. In fact, when I was a kid, I stayed in the river over here all the time. When the river would clear up top of the banks back then, we'd go up there and start way up the river and swim across it. Of course, I wouldn't advise any kid to do that now. It'd scare me to death what my own kids are doing. But that's the way we treated this river, and none of us was afraid of it. When the flood came up, I was sitting in the room here working a puzzle. It had been raining all day, and I was sitting in there, and Danny came up in town, my son. He said, "Dad," he said, "you know, we're going to get flooded." And I said, "Why?" I said, "The river up down high." He said, "Yeah, it's going up pretty high." So I grabbed an umbrella, and I said, "I'll go over and look." And Hilda was going to go with me, and about that time, I guess she called daughter, or my daughter called her, and she had to get her umbrella and stuff. So I just went over the river and I took one look at it, and I said, "Yeah, where it's at now, we're gonna catch a flood." So I came back, and when I came back, it's when the emergency car came around and said that the water was gonna get high, and we could go to the grade school if we wished. So I just stopped at my mother's, who lives right down between me and the river, and I told her, and I told her to get her sweater on and everything, or get her coat on, but we're going to have to get her out there. And so I got her, and Hilda went with my daughter. Jeannie picked her up. So I took my mother up on the hill at my cousin Miller's up above the manor there. And I left her there, and then I came right back and hooked my van to the boat. And Fred Stone, he took a little K wagon I had, he took it up on a hill, and I took the van and the boat and went downtown. Well, my brother Leo lives right on the river, called me, and he said, "I see you have your boat hooked up." And he said, "What are you going to do?" I said, "I'm getting out here, Leo." I said, "We're going to get flooded." Oh, he said, "Never did get in up here." Well, I said, "You better look around." Time I'd left here and went up on the hill and came back to get my boat, the water was coming across the road down here, but just right down this next crossing, just on the other side. And I told him, he didn't know it. He didn't know the water had come in behind him. It had come across down here instead of coming through here at that time. And so he hooked up his big trailer he has, and wilderness trailer, and he came, and his father-in-law and mother-in-law is in the trailer next to him there, and he went over and told them. They didn't know the water was coming up like that. So they all took their trailer up on the hill, and I took my boat up, and I parked it. I parked it there where I'd left my mother. And so, and Hilda and Jeannie and her family had